Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Pellegrini Financial and IPC Investment Corporation fourth quarter conference call, trumpeting in the new year. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Ryan Morcombe. Please go ahead, Mr. Morcombe.
Thank you, operator, and welcome everybody to our fourth quarter and year-end conference call and trumpeting in the new year. And yes, couldn't resist putting that name in there just for the sake of how the news goes these days. I guess I'll just start off with kind of summarizing quickly how the past year has gone for 2016. And we look back, I guess we started the year last year in a bit of a downswing with the general market decline based on concerns out of China and the future Chinese growth and growth in the Asian economies. And so the first two months of the year were kind of on a downswing. We slowly recovered throughout the course of spring and into summer, which, of course, then in June we had Brexit, which, of course, at the time was the British citizens voting to remove themselves, I guess, from the European Union. That had a bigger impact probably on the bond markets at the time, but also on equities as well, a little shorter term in nature, but obviously took everyone by surprise, and, of course, markets reacted accordingly. Again, once that kind of passed, we had, again, markets kind of turning the corner again, especially from August on. I suppose we saw a lot more positive gains and a little volatility, I suppose, too. And that, of course, as we got closer to the U.S. election, which was the other big event, I guess, for the year, and that actually was in the fourth quarter as well, caused a lot of gyrations in the market, good, bad, or otherwise, based on what the headlines were at the time. Obviously, the biggest thing that happened, of course, was with Trump actually winning the election, which initially set the markets downwards briefly. But then, since that point, markets have been on a bit of a run since that time. And all of that is based on the fact of more of his policies that he's trying to promote, or at least has stated, essentially in deregulation, so, you know, removing a lot of the chains and bounds of industry, to lowering taxes, to lowering personal taxes and corporate, basically, and trying to improve growth in the U.S. economy, bring jobs back to America, all that big slogan stuff that he has. And so that has driven the markets here as of late, and we've seen that in some of the returns. We'll come back to more of the political stuff, I guess, in a bit later. I guess specifically now looking at this fourth quarter, what we saw through the fourth quarter was, again, equities that performed quite well in Canada and North America, or U.S., I guess, in North America in general. A lot of it probably based with or led by resources, materials, financials, I guess, to a degree. I think especially the resource side, more so the fact that we probably saw the lowest of oil, perhaps, back in February of 2016. And, of course, we've seen a rebound in oil prices and resource prices in general since that time. And, of course, that sector as a whole has been underperforming for the last few years. So a bounce back obviously was expected. And, of course, that has led the markets. And I would say you would see that generally in all markets, whether that was in Canada, whether it was U.S. or Europe, you would see resources and materials and industrial sectors kind of leading the way for performance-wise. Financials, I think, was positive in the sense that, you know, again, a lot of the election talk, and from Trump in particular, was talking about, you know, some of the deregulation of the financial industry. And this is more specific, obviously, to the U.S., but some of that does filter, I guess, down into Canada and, of course, North America as a whole. And so that was a positive for those sectors as well. Probably some of the negative sectors was healthcare, and in probably some of the consumers and so on, just because, you know, there still is a bit of concern in regards to how much economic growth there truly is, and how much, I guess, spending power is left with the average consumer. Because generally, especially the U.S. economy, is basically a consumer-driven economy. And again, that hasn't had a lot of strength shown in it at this point in time. From the bonds perspective or bond portfolio positions, you know, interest rates, of course, as a whole remain low. And again, but you did see some positive returns from a portfolio standpoint on that low single digit in comparison to high single digit on the equity markets, which outside of the resources, which were probably in double digit kind of returns, gave us a reasonable return throughout the course of 2016. I would say the markets in general now are probably fairly priced. We've seen, like I said, some good bounce back more so in some of the downtrodden sectors like resources and materials. Internationally, you know, we still see probably some, you know, positive returns in international markets. Not so much in Europe. Europe tends to still, you see some positive markets, but then, you know, there's enough offsetting down markets there that you're kind of treading water in Europe at the moment. And emerging markets, which, you know, were kind of started the year out okay, but as of late kind of turned negative again. And I would think they are going to be more dependent on how global growth improves. And so we still see some general positive growth in the world economies. The issue, I guess, now is how much growth can be incurred on a political spectrum that is trying to maybe deglobalize now. You know, of course, we spent the last number of years in a globalization of the world and the economy. And, you know, who knows if the U.S. election and the Trump victory is the beginning of a deglobalization cycle or not. You know, obviously he's promoting a lot of values and a lot of regulation or, you know, I guess, rules that are trying to, you know, obviously put up a wall and restrict immigration, obviously, and restrict how companies operate and hold money offshore or off U.S. borders and so on, and all of that stuff is a deglobalization-centric kind of policy. So, again, who knows where that goes at this point. I mean, those are words, which doesn't mean that leads to legislation or action. But, you know, I guess some of this will be dependent on what happens in future elections in Europe between France and some of those other nations that are going to come up through 2017 and 18, and what kind of governments they elect. The British, of course, will start their exit process in the springtime here. That I don't think is going to play in the markets necessarily, but that's part of that geopolitical environment that I think everyone is kind of watching with a little interest and a little curiosity to see what kind of results that plays into the economies. Interest rates, to move on to a different topic. Interest rates, obviously we saw a U.S. increase here just towards the end of last year in 2016. And, you know, of course, through 2016, they started the year off saying there was going to be maybe three or four interest rate increases, and they ended up just doing one at the end of the year. Rates here in Canada generally have stayed the same. I wouldn't expect any change here in Canada based on, you know, probably softer economic data than there is in the U.S. The U.S. is once again thinking maybe three or four rate increases through the year. I probably would be surprised if they got to two. And I'm pretty sure that's the end of it for that 2017 year. The rates, I think, are, you know, to some degree normalizing. So, you know, we saw through the election in the fall, and obviously the rate increase in the U.S., it also kind of set kind of the barometer now for more of a normalization of interest rates. So, you know, we've seen in North America anyways, you know, kind of a low interest rate environment, and some of it forced upon by the Federal Reserve Bank in the U.S. and, of course, other central banks around the globe. And, you know, we saw as soon as that election was done and the rates rising in the U.S., more of a normalization, especially on the 5 or 10 year bond markets where, you know, 10 year bond markets were like 1.7% and now they're up to 2.4. So it was a pretty big jump in that, lending, or interest rates, but more of a normalization and more so where they maybe should be. So, you know, those U.S. rates have risen. It doesn't impact directly necessarily with the Canadian market, but it does infiltrate and does does impact our rates a little bit here. And so we did see, of course, like on mortgage rates here in Canada, you know, a little increase in the five-year mortgage rates and so on. As a whole, though, we haven't seen, like I said, an increase in Canadian rates to this point, and probably not anytime soon based on what our current economic conditions look like. From a currency perspective, you know, we've seen, you know, a bit of a drop in the U.S. dollar lately, but generally speaking, it's going to be probably a strong U.S. dollar. More so, that's, again, still a safe haven for everyone around the globe, but also the fact that rates are rising in the U.S. and not really anywhere else. So, again, if we're not having any rates here increasing in Canada, you still have negative rates in Europe, in Japan. So, you know, where does money find a home, right? So if you want security, you want some positive returns, even if it's not paying much, well, then you're going to the U.S. And that is going to support a stronger U.S. dollar as time goes by. And I think whether they like it or not, that's kind of inevitable. So, you know, the Canadian dollar, we've seen a bit of a rebound there lately, and that's obviously more so based on resources and the price of oil and so on. And I would expect that maybe, you know, again, based on oil markets and improving energy markets, then we should maybe see a small appreciation of the Canadian dollar through the course of the year. I think when we go to commodities specifically, you know, right into oil and gas, obviously oil, we've seen a nice jump in, I guess, the price of oil from the fall and the fourth quarter here in particular, where a lot of it obviously driven on the basis of OPEC finally committing to and agreeing to cuts. So they cut, we're looking to anyways cut 1.2 million barrels of production out of the OPEC nations. And so that obviously gave a boost to the price of oil and finally moved it above $50 back in the fall. We've been trading above that now for since that time, I guess. And, you know, we had some other non-OPEC cuts as well. So that is meant, obviously, to pull supply out in a demand market that has always been growing through the course of the year, just as obviously the supply was much greater. So the hope, obviously, and intention is to get an equilibrium there to where demand is equaling to supply, which then is meant to help drive prices further higher. Is there still a risk of a glut? Well, probably. The risk obviously is always there. I would say one of the biggest contingent points on that is, does OPEC remain committed? Right? Do they say, okay, yes, we're going to continue the cut and stick to it? Because obviously they've come to these agreements in the past and nothing's ever come of it. Because no matter what, they are producing a barrel of oil far cheaper than most other people, and so do they value the dollar more than the cuts, and do they value the dollar more of every sale versus a higher price of oil in the future? That will remain to be seen. One of the bigger things, I think, too, is also the fact that U.S. Shale oil has gotten to the point where at $50 they can make a dollar. Because even before these OPEC cuts, you actually saw U.S. shale production increase by $200,000 or 300,000 barrels before $50 was hit. And that being said, well, that would indicate that obviously anything above 50, that's going to be that much more of an increase. And so how much production they add, you know, we've seen obviously rigs increase in the States. We've seen rigs increase here at home, which is good. So utilization rates still being led by Alberta are probably double of what they were, you know, last year. So that's good for employment here locally and good for the economy near Alberta and, of course, Canada in general. But it does mean that, obviously, the supply of oil can come back on fairly quickly. So how much does that hold back the price of oil? That remains to be seen. Obviously, we'd hope and expect that, I think, continued appreciation of oil through the course of the year would get us to $60, hopefully, by year's end. I think everyone would be quite happy with that. Long term, it's hard to, you know, again, there's oil supply available that can be turned on quite quickly. I think that does put a cap on how much oil can appreciate over the next few years. But appreciation is good. Gas, natural gas, of course, has come up a little bit too, and that's been good for some of those natural gas companies. Obviously, the biggest thing, especially for Alberta, is just trying to get that stuff out to market without a discount. Obviously, lines going out west to the west coast is probably the best thing that could happen for Alberta. And so there's been certainly line approvals for oil, which is good. Maybe Keystone comes in, but to me, I think the west coast is probably the best value for our dollar. Other commodities, some of the base metals have risen too, which has been positive, again, for those materials markets in the economy and the stocks of that sector. Iron ore being a big one where now that has become probably the bigger one that's moved up, and that's been good for the economies of Brazil and Australia. Gold has kind of remained flat in general. Again, it's... Again, quite surprising to me in the sense that we've had a lot of different events go on through the course of the year, and including the election in the fall in the fourth quarter here, which didn't really impact gold one way or the other. And so gold has held its own, which is fine, I guess, but it hasn't moved any direction positively. And that's been, like I said, a bit of a surprise, I guess, into the markets. So I think on that front, those are positions there that we don't necessarily look at being big parts of anyone's portfolios anyways, and from an investment perspective, those are trading assets. I think, longer term now, as we look forward, I guess, to what 2017 is going to bring, like I said, markets, I think, as a whole, are fairly priced, maybe a bit of a frothy market in the U.S., perhaps. The question, I guess, is how much growth Trump and his new administration can increase in the U.S. Obviously, what they talk about and what they can do are two different things. Economic growth is still growing in Canada, improving in Canada, improving in Alberta. I think we've seen the worst here locally. The U.S. is obviously continuing to grow as well, and whether or not they can increase that growth from 2% to 3 or 4 is what they're hoping, remains to be seen. Europe, of course, is still working its way out from the recession they've been in over the last couple of years. Obviously there's concerns still in China and how much Asian growth remains. I think one of those factors that are going to play into all of this is the fact of this deglobalization. If that trend starts, then that, regardless of what you think it's going to do to your local economy, it does slow global growth, period, right? Trade does improve growth. Trade does improve profitability and opportunities for any citizen. So, that I think the political side of it is kind of a one question mark that remains to be seen of what exactly, what kind of regulations or what kind of environment are they trying to create that just doesn't promote, domestic growth, but promotes global growth around the world. And that'll be one of the things I think that everyone is going to watch a little more closely. Like I said, in Canada, I think, obviously there's a bit more positives in the sense that resource-wise, you got the prices improving both on the energy cycle market and the base metals as well. And so that becomes a positive. And so we'll see, I think, continued growth here in Alberta, Canada, and the Western economies. I think with perhaps some of the level of deregulation in North America, and perhaps that'll, kind of filter into some of the global environments as well, that improves profitability of different stocks and different sectors of the economy and improves growth. And if you have a lower tax environment on top of that, then the expectations could be for a good market through 2017. Obviously, the biggest thing is how fast these rules or regulations or tax changes happen. Obviously, the sooner they happen, the better off. The longer they drag out, then obviously the lower the growth of the economy will be, and the slower we'll achieve in getting that global growth to drive markets. So As a whole, I think right now, like I said, we got a fairly priced market. You're going to see some improvements here in Canada more than anything, I think. We got interest rates that are rising, which is good from a yield component standpoint. And I think if you have, like I said, a deregulated environment and a lower tax environment, then that's good for everybody. In Canada, you know, we'll see how, you know, some of these carbon taxes play into, I guess, companies and certain sectors of the economy and whether that has much of an impact or not. And time will tell on that. So in the meantime, I mean, we have our managers that are certainly on top of everything that's going on and have their pulse on the world of what happens both politically and economically and tax-wise and so on. And like I said, everyone I think has enough positive green shoots out there that they're feeling pretty good with what's coming down the road. I guess in the meantime, I would say thank you for joining us here on this call this morning. And if you do, again, have any questions, obviously feel free to call us anytime, and we'll sit down and go through what your questions are and any concerns you might have. In the meantime, thanks for joining us, and hope to hear and see you again in the next quarter conference call in the spring of 2017. Thanks, and bye for now.